Welcome to our Worldwide Network for Success, WWYNS, your dedicated business radio station. The mission of our station is to help you learn how successful managers and business owners direct their businesses, capitalize on opportunities, and overcome adversity. Our objective is to help you understand and apply their insights, then use your expertise in your own business or job so that you can become more successful. And now, here is your host, Joe Camara.
Today, our guest is Ralph Anderson of the Anderson Group, and Ralph's going to tell us about the nature of his consulting business. When someone asks you about your business, well, how do you describe it?
Well, Joe, my business is general consulting. So we serve a wide range of clients on a global basis, mainlining, helping them develop their business.
Okay. So how'd you get started?
Joe, the business I'm currently in, the Anderson Group, we got started in an evolutionary sort of a manner. I never really planned to be an entrepreneur and had worked for many, many organizations, and I've developed business units for Fortune 100, 500 companies, well over a dozen, expanding their businesses. And due to, the global influences, whatever, I found myself, decades ago in a position where I had to make a decision if I wanted to keep on doing the same thing or perhaps there was a better opportunity out there. And I found comfort in striving out and seeing what it was like to become an entrepreneur.
Okay. So if you were to identify your organization's mission in 25 words or less, what would you say?
I would say that our mission is to provide our customers with tomorrow's ideas today.
Great. Yeah. You've told us a little bit about your business. Could you tell us about the range of products and services you provide?
Certainly, Joe. The products and services that we offer, again, it was kind of evolutionary, and it might be best to kind of start at the beginning. The people that I had been able to interface with, we had some very, very unique capabilities. And it turned out that while I was with a publisher on a somewhat different mission of selling business insurance to him, I discovered that he had a need for automation, which was perfect for joining with an individual by the name of Chaz Tavener, where with our combined skills in motion control, automation, and advanced electronics, we were able to make a proposal to him. And this publisher had the need to take a manually operating line for paperback books and to automate it. So it kind of started off the organization. It was a very healthy contract. We did the proposal, and we were able then to give them a direct quote to implement it, and it kicked our business off in a very, very good direction. And then our company continued to grow because during that particular process, we found that there was a need within that system that could be not served within the United States. We needed to handle a paperback book, and it was one of the, if not the hardest product for material handling. It would stick or slide, and we needed a very, very high feed rate. And through circumstances, just plain good luck, what I was able to do is come up with a very, very talented man that was an expert in mechanics, and he was able to quickly provide a solution. And so the organization grew by enjoying his mechanical capabilities, and then the business continued to grow. We would go in and inquire what a customer's issues were, and when we found that there were things maybe beyond the current scope of our organization, we were able to enlist people and we could fill those gaps, and the company continued to grow from there, and we now have 8 kingpins locally and we have over 70 worldwide contacts, Joe.
Great. About some other examples?
Well, the business continued to grow. A good example would be for a local manufacturer here in Buffalo, New York. They were a producer of hard goods, and they had a very unusual organization set up where the business was at one of the key breakpoints of growth development within the PowerPoint philosophy, which I'll discuss later. And the need there was to obtain a particular piece of equipment for the smaller part of the business in terms of dollars. So I joined with the company, and I produced a selling document, if you will, based on justification, return on investment. And within that context, I was drawn into the company when they were acquired by a larger organization, and they had a very strong need to streamline the company. So I got involved with an operational perspective, and that turns out to be one of my specialties. I do teach a course in that direction, a master's over at Niagara University. So we formed a team and we streamlined their operations. And again, it's another example of how our business grew.
So your business is growing. You must have a good marketing system. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, our marketing system today has actually also evolved, Joe. During my business experiences, I went through a career of developing skills from engineering to product manager to developing marketing systems and eventually strategic businesses for these companies. And the experience there pointed out some deficiencies. The first organization that I really became aware of some of these deficiencies, what I discovered is that they had a vast need for marketing skills, but the company was driven from a sales orientation, and they didn't really work in harmony. And from my viewpoint, it didn't really operate to what I would consider an optimal viewpoint. So today we have a legacy system that has an advanced marketing concept, and it involves bringing a lot of tools together so that one can create four basic driving functions so that a business can grow and prosper more optimally than what I've observed in the past. So we have called this our integrated marketing system through Your Network for Success. And the four elements, first of all, one needs to create market awareness, much like a billboard. But much like a billboard, if you pass something, say, for auto insurance and have no need for it at that point, or accident policy, you become aware, but you don't have interest. So the next logical step is to create sufficient interest to create an environment for what we would call a trial sale. So a trial sale could be anything from an invitation to discuss an opportunity to the final sale. The trial sale, being the third element, can be anything from making the initial contact to a customer granting an interview, all the way through the actual order culmination. So at this point, utilizing those three functions and integrating them, you can now easily observe how we've gone from making customers aware, okay, which is a marketing function, all the way through a closing sales activity. Then the remaining function, though, would lie with customer service. Often that's off in its other environment, where here we integrate it so that given a customer base, one would want to retain the customers. So a dedicated retention program is ideal if it's driven by information of existing and new customers. And the additional factor is during that process, what is ideal is to discover where you stand with customers, where your customer improvement might lie, which can then feed back into the marketing system And in addition to that, if they are pleased with the service, they might become more aware and become another customer. Making that second sale is really the proof of being an effective service, but also asking if they're happy, what referrals. And by obtaining referrals from them, you can further expand your business and feed it right back into your cycle to expand your business. So that's essentially how we define the integrated marketing system.
So you're working on that now as part of your business development activities?
That is correct, Joe. Yes, okay. We are.
So compared to the competition, how are your services priced?
Our pricing, Joe, is really driven in a couple of directions. But number one, we're small. We don't have the overhead of large companies. And we're very, very selective. And we feel with the small team that's selected from our inventory, if you will, that we can serve a customer with a lot less overhead than our competition can. So not only can we be effective there where we do not require the overhead expense, our costing is extremely effective. We found it many cases it can be anywhere from a third in terms of cost savings all the way up to over 50% dealing with, you know, larger firms. The other thing we can provide too is that we're being small, but we're also more effective in delivery. And that's all part of the package, that we can deliver turnaround situations sometimes in less than 3 months, where another organization may take, as our data shows, well up to 2 to 3 years. And that's the kind of development cycle I'm used to working with these larger companies. So that's pretty well what makes us not only effective but efficient.
So if I understand it properly, you're cost effective and you're nimble on your feet. Is there anything else that makes your service unique?
The thing that makes our service unique is that we are indeed global, and there are several examples of how this can be effective in terms of awareness. I think an example here of one of the things that we did for a large automotive company dealt with their instrument panels. And when we entered the company and through some contacts that I had there, we understood that there was a very, very large issue in terms of where the instrument panel was, because everybody wanted access to that space, the engine people, the guys that made the radios, a lot of competition for that space, and the instrument panel itself was 4 inches in depth. And what we discovered when we went into the department, that the department basically was a department of stepper motor experts. And they had stepper motors behind every one of these, which are very, very large. We went out to our global resources, and one of the key individuals that we contacted was a polymer expert. We had Chaz Tavner as an electronics expert, and myself in terms of the packaging and the cost benefit driving it. And we formed a package essentially by not utilizing stepper motors, but an advanced electronic concept, and we could merge it right into the polymers, and we could take about 90% of the space away, and the cost was actually reduced by over 50% from a global approach that involved technologies that the company wasn't even considering.
So if you get a call from someone in Hong Kong, would you be able to help them?
Absolutely. In fact, we have experience. I worked with the Oriental companies for well over, I would say, a decade. And we have installed everything from simple services to advanced motor design, all the way through lights out manufacturing.
So as you think about your firm, what are your top three competitors?
The top competitors that we have are largely based on where we get our equipment from. Because they will enter a company, let's say, to automate, and the management may want, like in the case of Harlequin, just that particular service. And a lot of times, even though their price is higher and we could do a better job, one of the things about having the advantage being small, a lot of your larger companies don't have confidence in small companies. They only deal with big names. And so you have people like Siemens and Yaskawa and Rockwell. And these people tend to be competition that particular criteria is hard to overcome, Joe.
Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing into our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.networkforsuccess.com for more detail. That's network, the number 4, success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6.
How would you list your competitive advantages compared with these big companies?
Well, again, the advantages that we do offer is not only are we cost effective, but our concepts are usually a top-down approach. And what do I mean by a top-down approach? It means that we do things ideally from a strategic point to find out where the company is going, where it's headed, find out if they really are entrepreneurial in nature and want to advance. And if so, our approach then would take a much wider perspective in its solution. So from a strategic base, like the example I gave for the automotive company, the concept, the top-down approach, essentially, is very, very easy to sell, Joe.
Great. So how do you position your company's services?
Well, let me understand the question better. When you say position, do you mean from a leadership point of view?
Well, I guess it's... You know, if you take a typical strategic perspective, what you want to do is identify where your strengths are compared with your competitor's strengths, and how do you help your customers understand what those strengths are compared to the bigger companies?
Well, in the first case, we lead off by inquiring with the organization, you know, help us identify your top needs. And understanding those needs, we, given our perspective, may ask a few questions. But once we feel that we have sufficient information to get a baseline of where the company wants to go, what we do is we offer a no-charge proposal on what our solution would be. And we will review that proposal with them. And again, being a trial sales at that level, that normally gains acceptance because we're able to introduce, you know, new concepts that they've never had. In many respects, on a global basis, it introduces them to what we'll call blue water markets, which I can define later on. But essentially, it's comparable to what people consider a niche market, which leads to growth in that particular direction. I think that one of the larger tools that we use is that we guarantee our results. Now, how can you guarantee results? Well, lessons that I've learned from the past is that upfront you identify the criteria for acceptance. And on a mutually based agreement of what is acceptable, it's defined in the contract so that there is no misunderstanding between what it is they wish to accomplish and what we will accomplish. And on top of that, we do manage it in what we call a team management philosophy. Larger words for that could be matrix-driven management style, but essentially it means team management. And most importantly, it means that we require that members of the organization be an active part so that we understand what the core values are and they have mutually agreed to a common goal and success. And that style of management in many cases is quite unique. Often as a consultant, you're viewed sometimes as being separate, apart, maybe even somewhat aloof, where we actually insist on this particular style that involves the activity of their key people as well, Joe.
Great, Ralph. I know in talking with you in the past, there are some things that haven't worked. We always like to learn about some of the things that haven't worked. What can you give me an example of something that didn't work and how you recoup from that, and what lessons you might have for others based on your recommendations?
Certainly, Joe. Our company being small, and again, we developed the business based on this power curve philosophy and also implementation, which I can define later on. But we were able to take a very small business, and we based the business in our basement. We had all of our manufacturing equipment for electronics there, and it was small, not much overhead. But as the business grew and expanded, typically, you know you're on a power curve when your sales double every 2 years, and they were. The activity got to a point where we had too much traffic in the area. Neighbors complained, and the town authorities advised that we could no longer continue, that we needed to operate externally to the home. So we developed a business. We rented a facility in an industrial parkway. And we employed, as the business grew, up to 12 people. Well, a couple of years ago, as we built our business, say from $50,000 a year, we were getting ourselves up into the $660,000 category. We projected $720,000. The economy hit us bad with $330,000. And with the overhead that we had and the liabilities we had to find an alternative plan. So that might be a version of, unexpected potential failure. How does one recover? My advice in that direction is that while you're operating, always be sensitive to your vulnerability. In our case, we had a couple of options that we did have in store, Joe. One was to refinance. That was not necessarily the best. But the other thing is that we did have observation about how our business was distributed, so that we weren't reliant necessarily on one particular customer. But because we were servicing our customer base well, there was one customer that we had that not only was loyal but didn't want to lose the confidentiality of our services. So in that particular case, we made an arrangement to sell the business to them, and it turned out to be the best opportunity for us, because we were able to maintain the business, but under their entity, not ours, Joe.
So in terms of your challenges now and gaining customers and growing your business, how would you describe that?
We have a strategic business plan, Joe, and as a result, we have taken into account what I've just described, and now we're venturing into avenues that we feel can be managed in a direction so that we can get the same kind of business activity and even greater opportunities. And right now what we're doing is we're really focusing on our advanced marketing system. Again, as you know, it's part of this radio show that we're broadcasting here at WWYNS. There are hundreds of tools that are available, and we're finding now that this business is growing at a faster pace than it did when it was before we had to sell the electronics portion of our division.
So if you were to describe the customer for this marketing system, what would be your description for an ideal customer?
An ideal customer for us would be one that is already established, has marketing systems, one that, let's say, would be a medium-sized company, say around $100,000 or so. And this type of customer would be ideal because they have a base, they have experiences, and we are able, through our experience, we know that we can go in and utilize our system. And the bottom line is our system will get them more clients, and these companies that we would select would have a value of their average sale that would be considerable that would more than justify just adding one customer, and we find that it would not be difficult for us to obtain at least one customer a quarter above and beyond their current base on a regular basis, Joe.
So when you talk to a prospective customer, what are their major concerns?
Typically, their major concerns are, can you really do this? We find that sometimes there are people that just don't want to accept things at face value. So our biggest concern that we have met is people may see the benefit, but they're not really, they need an extra step in order to get started. So in that direction, we've taken a unique approach, a little bit different than what we normally do, is that we are so confident that we can provide the benefits that what we'll do is we'll say, try us out and let's make an arrangement where we can mutually benefit from our success. And given that, we can move forward.
Okay, so given this challenge and, you know, the opportunities for the future, what do you see coming down the road as far as the future growth of your firm is concerned?
Well, the future growth of my company is based on, again, maybe now is a good time to explain a little bit about what I mean by a power curve, Joe. The bottom line is that we expect, given our current base, that our business should grow at least double successfully every 2 years. Now that experience is based not only in theory, which I teach, but it also goes along with my personal experience, the 12 divisions that I did develop successfully and met corporate objectives while building their business has followed a process that starts again with top-down vision, getting the proper strategic plan in place, quantifying it so that it can be measured, and then filtering it down to the proper line functions, which would be your business plan, and then integrating those two tools, which we do in the Anderson Group. So coming up with a strategic business plan is key. And again, maybe a good example of the power curve would be my first experience in that process, where I joined an electronics company that had a lot of opportunity. They were wise enough to know that they needed to change their product service base. In this particular case, they were the world leaders in an industrial relay. Computers were coming of age. They wanted to combine the electronics in the sense that one who manufactured typewriters needed to recognize what was going on in the world of computers because they may become obsolete. The company started with a base of no more than four people from a variety of sources within the company. And from there, when I joined the company, we were experiencing about $1 million in sales, Joe. And I was involved. That's where I made a transition from an engineering role to a product development role. And through the process that we used, getting in and taking advantage of some of the situations the customers were in, number one, they were a high quality manufacturer, well recognized. They had over 300 salespeople. But none of these salespeople understood what this electronic device would do, and they found it very, very difficult to do. But through the marketing systems that we had and the association with their sales department, we developed in a similar system to the integrated marketing system I talked about, because we were able to enjoin them very, very effectively. The business developed very, very rapidly. And there were a number of steps which I don't need to describe right now, but the end results are worth noting, that we started with $1 million. We passed up the $15 million mark in less than 18 months, and from there we went through another hurdle, which was 50 million, and then we attained over $100 million of sales within less than 4 years, Joe. And that particular process educated me, and then I did it over and over again, six times with the same company, and that's the basis of the power curve, by employing the ability to develop the right strategic business plan. I would develop the plan, and then I would take the line function, implement it, and be sensitive to how to measure it. So that's a brief definition of how that process works, Joe.
Great. You've talked about when there's fast growth, there are some spin-off areas or other areas you have to pay attention to other than the sales and revenue. What are some of those?
When one hits a key point, and again, with experience, businesses grow, and when they achieve a certain level, the infrastructure within that company had to change. And a lot of the lessons that I learned were through that first experience I just observed, because we ran into a lot of hurdles that were not anticipated. But the measurement system, now that I've been through it many, many times, occurred, Joe. The first one is when you're at low sales level up to a $5 million level. When you hit a $5 million level, your infrastructure needs to change, or you will not succeed in expanding. In fact, you can lose market share. The next level is 15 million, the next level is 50 million, and the next level is 100 million. And in our experiences that we've had mutually, and myself personally, that I now am aware of the changes in an infrastructure a company can make. The one company I mentioned previously, manufacturer here in Buffalo, was at a $15 million level, and if they didn't make changes, they basically would not be in business today.
Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing into our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.networkforsuccess.com for more detail. That's network, the number 4, success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6.
That's interesting, Ralph. As we begin to wrap up this program, we always ask our interviewees about helping us understand how to get the best value out of the services that they provide. So we're looking for your recommendation. If someone were interested in working with you, how to get the maximum benefits with the minimum economic expenditure, what would you say to that?
Joe, it all starts with our very first question to a company as to what their top issues are. So the thing is that you really have to find out, you know, what their real needs are, what the nature of their needs might be, so that you can focus on their perception, if you will, of what is needed within a company. One of the side notes that I need to make at this stage is that during that process, it is often incurred that a company with the decision makers may list certain needs, but as time moves forward, we find out that those needs may need to be refocused based on their experience or maybe a lack of understanding of what could be done. But moving forward, let's take a baseline of having needs to start with. And once you have those needs, one of the tools that is really needed that is not done very often is needs are often expressed in a qualitative fashion. They aren't quantitized. And they aren't quantitized throughout an organization. And you need to develop a balanced program. If someone is dominant in a company and, say, the vice president of operations is a domineering force, you'll find that maybe he's steering those objectives, and there's a process one can make to optimize that so that everybody's viewpoint is taken into account. Make people aware so that you have a balanced program so that you can move forward in a balanced way and not take off in a direction and slide off the pinnacle. So that process is in place. Once you've established the needs, then what you need to do is to focus your services in that direction. And I'll give an example of that in what I might call the rainbow approach to selling insurance or handling risk of investment. It's one that's easy to do, Joe, because what I will do with a customer in a financial advisement situation, I will ask what their needs are, but then I will focus a program that is directed so that the ideal match between what I can offer is tuned to those needs. For example, the rainbow approach would be one where I describe, say, five colors, blue, green, yellow, orange, and red. And within that range of the rainbow, blue would be a very conservative person that is concerned about not losing what he has and not looking for optimal gain. Where on the opposite end of the scale would be red, where the guy is a gambler, he wants to rock and roll, and he's willing to risk. And again, you find out where that client lies, and you will match products. So I have in my financial bag products that are blue, products that are green, yellow, orange, and red. In fact, the way the companies I work with are organized, it's kind of interesting that the materials are actually color-coded in that direction. So I hope that example of trying to match true value is really in the eyes of the beholder. You have to understand his values, and then I think you can provide the best products and services.
Ralph, there are some interesting concepts you use in your business to help your customers get the results that they're looking for. Can you give us a sample of what some of them are?
Joe, we like to start off with what I call a top-down approach. We ask our customers, and when we make first contact initially, you know, would they please describe some of their top issues? And based on that discussion, we like to look at that and see how that folds into their strategic thinking and how they implement it in a business manner. And we develop whatever project that might come out of this with this top-down approach, which means that we want to fold the project into their strategic business plan. What we'd like to do is to move that business towards what I call a power curve, which essentially is doubling their sales every 2 years, given the right techniques that we use. And we do it in a management grid style, which simply said is team management. One of the things that sets apart us apart from our competition is our ability to get a company into what we'll call a blue water market, which is a recent term, but more simply said, niche marketing, Joe.
Is there any particular one of these you want to expand on a little bit?
Well, I'd like to kind of expand on each one briefly.
Okay, let's start with the first one.
Right, the top-down design. Again, Joe, in my experience, before I got into the Anderson Group as an entrepreneur, I work for large corporations, top 100, 500 organizations, and develop businesses. And what I discovered in developing 12 successful businesses within these organizations is that the people were not relating their strategic plan to their business plan. And in many, many cases, the company didn't really have a strategic plan. So what I like to do is, again, I've discovered certain techniques that work quite well that when you're sitting in a meeting, you can establish and transition, if you will, from qualitative statements, quantify them, so that one can measure them and make sure that the measurement process is included, okay, in the procedure. What I found most successful when working with a particular organization from Japan is that they folded their program in to take the strategic plan into a line function. And they would monitor the results of that business plan once a month. Then every quarter, they would bring in top executives to review how the connection between the strategic goal, which could be, say, 5 years out, was folding in with the business plan. And because of the nature of our markets today being global and rapidly changing, they would make adjustments at that point, Joe. So it's a very, very effective way if you can measure how your plan is going and do it periodically. The odds of success and having a balanced program are very, very high.
Well, you mentioned this power curve idea. I think that also fits in with this idea of strategic and business planning, does it not?
Absolutely, Joe. when you're developing typically a strategic business plan, you're trying to balance a number of goals. For example, key goals would be profit, marketing share, and sales dollars. And these things inherently tend to want to be in conflict, so you need to, at the top, you need to make sure that that platform remains balanced in a way the company wants it to be, so that opposing forces are actually working in concert together to make that platform. If the platform is stable, what I've discovered is that will it enable you to get on what I call a power curve. And the power curve is simple to observe, and not only through the experience that I have, but we've also done it academically, that once you see your sales grow and develop and double every 2 years, you know that you're on what I call a power curve. So the objective from the strategic plan to the business plan to its monitoring and control is to develop your business to grow in that manner, a power curve. And in every one of the 12 divisions that I formed, I was able to do that. Typically, I can get that business activity on that kind of a curve in less than 2 years.
What are some of the key insights that this power curve idea gives you?
Well, the insight that I get from this is that when a company grows, that in order to keep the platform balanced, when you monitor sales, which again is a key indicator, that when your company grows to a certain volume, that there are conditions that you have to anticipate if you want to continue to grow. And that means that you need to change your infrastructure in order to get past certain barriers. And the experience that I have has shown that those breakpoints typically occur when a company reaches $5 million in sales, $15 million in sales, $50 million in sales, $100 million in sales, and so forth. So when you're monitoring these things and you're constantly getting feedback and you work as a team, if you will, in order to keep that platform balanced, you're practically guaranteed that kind of growth, Joe.
Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing into our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.networkforsuccess.com for more detail. That's network, the number four, success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6.
So this team idea of matrix management you mentioned,
yes.
How does that work?
Well, the ideal here is that you balance your management skills so that you treat the business issues of, let's say, sales dollars or business results in projects on one particular platform, and on the other platform you address the people issues that are occurred to build the team. And to put that in a nutshell, while you're doing the day-to-day business and monitoring, what you're doing is you're also making sure that the people, you're using their strengths. You don't try to take a person that's shaped like a circle and put them in a square. You use and amplify those strengths, and those strengths are shared amongst the team. And the end goal there is that you're going to build a team, and loyalty is key here. And when you have that working for you, then you essentially have maximized your operating performance.
Okay, and the last concept you mentioned had something to do with blue water. Is that a blue water tower?
Well, there's books written, or a book written called Blue Water Markets. It essentially is, with a global market, okay, in a competitive world, it, in many cases, niche marketing, which is an older term, they're, in my opinion, quite similar. What you try to do is create either a product or a service that is unique so that you escape the competitive market and enter a blue water market via creating something that is truly, truly unique. And I can give some examples. One of the things that made the Anderson Group start quite successfully is that we had experience with members of the team wherein we had an electronics expert that dealt with miniaturization, and we had experience with both the aerospace and military markets and the industrial marketplace. And what we were able to do is apply the higher technology that we had access to throughout the military aerospace environment and apply it to industry. So what we developed was miniaturized the electronic package, and we did it in a way that we could actually integrate it into a product. Given that, we could add intelligence to a product. We could communicate with that product, even satellite communication. And having intelligence, say for example, something as obvious as a sheet in a hospital, and you add electronics so that you can monitor for changing the sheets, for example. And given that unique combination, you're able to break through a highly competitive market by having a totally unique product.
So you've talked about your team a little bit. Maybe you could amplify on the nature of the team you access?
Well, as I have mentioned, that the company has grown, and I gave an example when we were working with a publisher wherein we were able to enjoin, say, a team of two with myself and Chaz Tavner in electronics, and we found a need for mechanical, and we found an individual that was extremely talented right here in Buffalo, New York, and developed an electromechanical package which enlarged our territory. And throughout the years, we've been able to add folks that have very unique skills. For example, the company that you and I have mutually gotten together, we've known each other for years, but now we've taken and added your integrated marketing tools, advanced marketing skills, to be available in a very unique way. And working together as a team, we now can now go to the social media to take this legacy system that we've had. And it's a way of, again, evolutionary, along comes a technology. And so we're taking advantage of that as we are today. We can give other examples in a business-to-business situation. When I went into the publisher, I was there on a business-to-business insurance basis. So with that experience and getting to know that I needed to add some things to the financial package, I engaged with Larry Sarasa, who has well over 12 years of experience with that particular field. The story continues. Given the social media, interfaced with the people that developed my website, and so we promoted that service to go out and contribute to our efforts in the social media. And as a result, Joe, we now have 8 people that are right here in Buffalo with specialized skills that can address just about any issue. In addition to that, throughout the years, we've established over 70 contacts worldwide, some of them, for example, in Oxford, college professors, folks around here from Niagara University, Canisius, and these worldwide contacts, we have mutual understanding of our capabilities. So when we interview with a client, we are able to know exactly where we would get the best expertise, and we form a team around that and offer the customer, again, a global visionary concept that is highly likely to be better than most consulting companies here that are national, Joe.
One of the issues we always like to ask a guest is about things that didn't work. Are there some strategic activities or some tactical activities that you'd be willing to share with us that you thought were going to work but didn't, and then you were able to overcome? You have an example of that?
I have what I call almost a classic example of how that can happen to an organization. With the experience that I had, I was highly confident of the procedures for developing a business and putting them on a power curve. So a while back, I had the opportunity to join with a manufacturer of high-performance servo valves, and these folks had technology in hydraulic and also pneumatics. And it was a period of time when the electronics, the ability to control an AC motor, was becoming very cost-effective. So I joined this company that had a zero base with only four people, you know, very similar to the activities that I've done in the past. And we proceeded to develop that marketplace. So the obvious thing when I entered the company is they were already known worldwide for their ability to control robots. And that ability hit a high point just about the time, in fact, right at the time that I joined the company, say in 1984, when they had a robotic exhibit in Detroit that introduced robots to the world, and they were going to conquer problems of manufacturing. And the show at Cole Hall was filled with folks. You couldn't even get through the line. There was so much attention to this activity. And our company had installations where they used their hydraulic technology for robotics. So we started off by installing, if you will, on a try-us and like-us basis on their robotic developments, and we installed our motors worldwide. And they were basically available in any top contender in that marketplace. And the reason that it gained acceptance is that the technology we were offering was a motor that had a lot more power in a tremendous amount of space conservation. They were tiny. They were more power two dimension. And that was our whole theme, is we offer more power per dimension, and we could fit, say, a six-staged robot all the way from a big motor in the base to a tiny little motor in the wrist and give full performance with a common technology. I knew I was going to be successful. Well, after about a year, Joe, I found that my sales were zero. And I had used all the techniques that I thought was extremely logical. We had an in-house market. The market was going crazy. And I said, well, what's wrong here? What's wrong with this picture? So utilizing the matrix grid or the team, I went out to our clients and walked into factories that were loaded with inventory, and I interviewed them, and I found some folks that would give me some clues, and I was told that, well, we're having problems, we're not sure we really understand the issues, but you really need to talk to the folks we supply these to. You have to talk to our primes. So I entered the automotive market and started to engage with those folks, and I found an audience that informed me that the automotive market does not have a real market for a general purpose robot, that their needs require very, very specialized machines due to the nature of the way they manufacture. So the robots coming in as a general purpose device were not successful. So I searched for clients within their particular marketplace that produce those machines, and when I entered that company, they said, wow, this is really fantastic, because, and this is key, Joe, that it's not so much more power per dimension that is really attractive, but Ralph recognized that when you have that unique motor, you can essentially decrease the automotive cycle time. So it's not so much more power per dimension, it's, hey, automotive marketplace, how'd you like to decrease your cycle time? And I'm sure you're aware that the automotive companies, you know, they kind of, they would kill to save a penny per part because they make so many products. And if I can take 10, 15, 20% out of their cycle time, the productivity goes up, and that was key. Joel, from that point on, within less than 2 years, we grew to 2 million, then 4, then 8, and after 8 years, we were at 25 million in sales.
So the bottom line is find the sweet spot, find the blue water opportunity?
Find the right sweet spot, and always make sure that you can create the environment to get the right information, you know, that's there. You know, I've experienced clients that describe, you know, their benefits, but they might not really be using what I'll call the golden words. In my case, more power dimension was key to robots. However, decreasing cycle time is what really made me successful, Joe.
Great. Thanks.
Okay. If someone were interested in talking with you further, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, there's many, many ways that you can do that. You can contact me directly at my phone number here in Buffalo, New York, which is 716-688-0030.
Yeah.
Again, that number is 716-688-0030. Another way to contact us is through social media, and that is available through our website, which is www.ralphanderson.com. Again, that's www.ralphanderson.com. So again, to repeat, two best ways to get in touch with me is my direct number, 716-688-0030, which is directly into my office, or through our website, www.ralphanderson.com. You will also find within that website an interlink that will take you to Network for Success, one of the businesses we are strongly focusing on. And that website, again, would be www.networkforsuccess.com. NETWORK, the number four, success. SUCCESS. www.networkforsuccess.com. Thanks,
great,
Joe.
Ralph. Well, I appreciate your being with us. I hope our listeners got at least one good idea from your conversation. And hopefully we'll be talking again soon. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Joe.
YNS is a full-service integrated marketing services firm. We develop and deliver a sophisticated, custom-made system called Integrated Marketing Squared. The Squared designation results from the marriage between a highly successful legacy system and the digital world's many free marketing tools. This marriage produces exponential results for our customers. YNS helps our customers get the IMS Squared benefits and the most valuable marketing system they will ever use. The goals of your network for success are to, 1, provide you with up to a 10-to-1 return on your marketing investments, 2, enable you to achieve better marketing results and sales results for less, 3, get the IMS Squared benefits, and 4, the bottom line is to help your customers build their business. To talk to us personally, call 575-RESULT-6. That's 575-RESULT-6, or in numbers, 575-737-8586. 575-737-8586. Or visit us on the web at www.network4success.com.
Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing into our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.network4success.com for more detail. That's network4success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6. Our program, The Leading Edge of Supply Chain Management, was brought to you by Supply Chain Optimizers. SCO is a logistics company known for providing personalized, end-to-end cost-saving tools and techniques focused on improving the hundreds of opportunities firms have hidden within their supply chain activities. If you want to download 15-minute segment podcasts of this program, simply go to www.networkforsuccess.com. That's network4success.com. This program was produced and directed by Your Notebook for Success and is copyrighted as of March 11th, 2013.